Welcome back to Lucy, the coolest retro trailer and our recording studio today. You're listening to Karma Has Spoken, and I'm Danielle Karmanis. I was reading a great book called The Happiness Passport, a world tour of joyful living in 50 words. And I was thinking it's kind of what we're doing right here, right now. We're in a trailer taking a tour of conversations with people living their purpose with passion. And we're so lucky to have this time together to listen and laugh and learn. The happiest times of our lives are spent together, and I'm so happy to be sharing this adventure with you. So goat yoga is a thing, and I'm not kidding. Get it? Okay. Well, actually, I'm hearing so many great things about this new trend, and we're here with the expert to give us the inside scoop, the owner of Hilltop Views Farms, Sean Canarelli.
Hi.
Hi, Sean.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Yeah. Welcome to Lucy, my trailer.
I love this so much.
I wish you brought some goats.
Oh, you know, I was tempted because we have two new babies.
Oh,
yeah. Man. I was so tempted, but I didn't know the environment just
next
yet.
Next time.
So
yeah,
let's do it again.
You out too. All right, yeah, I definitely am going to try goat yoga. So I have a bunch of friends who have done it. They love it. They said they laughed the whole time.
At our farm or someplace?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But they laughed and they had a great time. So probably yours.
Oh,
right?
Well, great.
Because you're so adorable.
I'll just go with that.
So what is goat yoga?
So goat yoga is just really a great opportunity for people to just get back outside, be in nature. We actually have a 100-year-old barn that's just beautiful, and you get to do yoga and play with goats at the same time. So what's more to love than
nothing.
That?
So I was doing a little bit of research, and there's actually a name for this, Supreme Vinyasa. Is that right?
That's a yoga.
What kind of yoga are you doing, and what are the goats doing while you're practicing?
While you're doing yoga? So just a little context for you. A typical goat yoga class is an hour and a half, and we start out with a 10-minute warm-up with our yoga instructors. We have certified regular yoga instructors, and then the goats come in. And in our classes, there's 7 to 9 goats, mostly Nigerian, 1 boar. So they're a little bit smaller.
Okay.
But the instructor just keeps teaching yoga, and it's just a very safe beginning start poses to yoga.
Okay.
So for those that might be intimidated by yoga, this is a great place to learn about it because people are more focused on the goats who are meandering around and visiting you and loving on you. And the smaller ones, when you go into certain poses like table pose where you're on all fours, they often jump on your back.
Fun.
Yes. It's so fun.
And how much do they weigh?
Well, they vary. So I have 2 new little babies, 2.5 pounds, up to my boar goat who is about 80 pounds.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
So is he jumping on people as well? No. I kind of like that.
Do you?
Well, I remember when I was a kid and I'd want like my brother to walk on my back and it would crack, which is, I'm paying for it now at 45. But...
But the larger ones will come up and they might just go nose to nose.
Okay.
Goats are very, very social and they just want to be by you. And they're actually quite clean animals. So a lot of people don't understand that. They're a lot like dogs. They're even cleaner than dogs, to be honest.
Really? So that's a great point because as I was researching, I was thinking, you know, of course, with yoga, it's all about the breath and breathing in and exhaling. I thought, so does it kind of smell like a barn or are they, what is?
Well, yeah.
Which is okay.
I think you would expect
it to an extent, but I don't think people think of goats as being very clean.
Absolutely. You are right. We have about 5 acres and we have most of the classes are in our 100-year-old barn. We've refurbished it, but it was custom built by the original farmer and we've had it inspected by barn restorationists and it's beautiful.
Oh, how wonderful.
So yes, it does smell like a barn, but it's very clean
because
we disinfect regularly and it's just the beautiful old wood. So yes, it smells like a barn. You are outside, but the environment is just so welcoming. And then we sit up on a hill. So when you open the barn door, you're overlooking hundreds farm acres.
Oh, that's why you're called
Hilltop Views Farm.
It's all coming together. Okay.
It's a gathering place for life, love, and learning. So when you bring goat yoga, we always say that people come in with whatever stress they have in their life, open the barn doors, they play with the goats, the stresses go out the back of the barn.
Right.
And even if just for a minute, you get to feel relaxed and joyful.
It's everything.
Just for a minute. And we are seeing this kind of transition of people in front of our eyes. And it's something I get emotional.
Oh, no, I love that. Tell me why.
Well, I think when we started getting involved with this, I attended our space yoga. And Sharif Farah was my instructor. And we had goats prior. So my husband and I both have careers. We were heading into Empty Nest. And so people started sending me clips of this trend of goat yoga because I hadn't known it was a thing. Yeah. And I knew what my goats did for me and I knew what yoga did for me. So it wasn't a shock. So when I reached out to the original founder and we had this conversation, and then I started experiencing it for myself and seeing people, just what would happen to them while they were doing goat yoga, because they don't expect it. And then you see the joy, and then they are just so thankful for the space and the opportunity.
Right.
I didn't expect that. Mm. I didn't expect that.
Well, and now that I'm thinking about it, you know, pets have that effect, right?
Yes. Or it's like animal therapy.
Animal therapy, horses and therapy and all that. And so people are, it's just very disarming,
I would imagine.
And then tying in the laughter, and it just kind of releases.
It brings us back to play. And as adults, we can be kids. We can be kids.
Right.
And you don't have to have an excuse.
Oh,
it just happens. And you see it from kids who are 8 years old to people that are 85. Mm-hmm. We've had all ages. It's not discriminative. All are welcome. We have people come from all over the state. Actually, we've had people come from 5 states and Canada, and people that are visiting here about it. They come from other countries. And it's just been incredibly rewarding and to share this joy.
I want
joy.
Everyone to go. Do you have a website?
We do. It's lansingmichigan.goatyoga.net.
Okay.
And we have classes every weekend, and we also do special events, private events. We also partner with, like we did a farm to table event last year, and we partnered also with my husband's family's vineyard, and we had wine and local ingredients from local farms and had this big dinner and goat yoga. We have live music sometimes in our classes.
Oh my gosh, Sean, that's the dream.
That's my dream. Oh my,
keep talking. I'm just like, I'm definitely going to visit, and I want to do the dinner, and I want the wine, and I want the big table and the bar. I mean, look, my favorite place is a trailer named Lucy.
We're traveling through here. I'm like, this is the best.
We're kindred spirits.
I think so.
So my last question, what should yogis wear to goat yoga class?
So anything that's comfortable and that you can have movement in, and I will be transparent with, they have what's called goat berries sometimes.
Okay.
So it's a little goat poo.
Okay.
But it's okay because it doesn't, not a strong smell or anything, but do wear something that you don't mind gets a little bit dirty if their hooves get on your back.
Okay.
But overall, they're very clean animals. So just wear your regular yoga clothes. Be comfortable. Be relaxed. Have fun. We have mats for you, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
Just come and enjoy yourself and
love this.
Meet so many fun people and meet
good
these lovely
you.
Goats.
Good for you for creating this whole experience.
Thank you.
At this point in your life, like you said, looking for the next step, and you could have done anything, but you're doing something that is changing lives and making the world a better place and just creating opportunities for people that they otherwise wouldn't have had. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. We feel very blessed to be part of it.
I'll see you soon at Goat Yoga.
Thank you. Okay. I can't wait.
There's a rumor our next guest got his big break playing funerals with superstar Kristen Bell. He's a local pianist, minister, vocalist, songwriter, and studio writer. He's composed for movies and worked with George Clooney and Bradley Cooper. And as of yesterday, he is a hero to my 4 little boys and the composer of the Carmanis Carpool Anthem called Oopsies. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
How are you?
Good afternoon. So, I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us, how did you get started?
In music.
Or anything.
It goes back a long way. And how did I get started in anything?
I think we're talking about music, but we can talk about anything.
Mommy and Daddy loved each other very much. I started music when I was, I mean, as long as I can remember, I started playing the piano. My mom was a little bit into it. She sang a lot, kind of knows, never, you know, on the pro circuit, but she kind of knows the word to every jazz standard in history for some strange reason, just because she's such a huge fan. She's just got it in the blood.
Was there always a lot of music in your house when you were growing up?
Yeah, there was a fair amount of it. My mom was way into jazz singers. Judy Garland was her hero. And my dad was kind of a 50s, 60s rocker back in the day and had a band in high school. And, you know, they were all, you know, amateur at best.
So do you have siblings?
I do. I'm one of 6.
Oh my gosh.
It's
okay.
Absurd.
Wow. And so are you all musical?
Yeah, to some degree.
Okay.
We're kind of all over the spectrum. Like some of us are into it more on the creative end of the spectrum. Some more kind of the academic end. But I'm
the only one
who does. Well, no, actually I have a brother who teaches. He teaches music, teaches classical guitar and teaches at a university in Kalamazoo. And the two of us are the only ones that do it. Pro.
Okay. Yeah. Where do you fall in the lineup of 6?
I'm the 3rd of 4 boys, and then there are 2 girls after that.
I have 4 boys.
I know.
Yeah, but
crazy.
No girls. Yeah. And people ask me all the time if we're going to go for the girl, but my baby was 11 pounds. My boys went from 5'14 to 7'3 to 9 to 11. So the next would be 13, right?
Wait,
so
11 pounds.
Can you imagine, right?
I've never even heard. I don't think I've heard.
Know.
Is that a record?
I know. He came. I think it's because he was the youngest of four boys, and he just like came out like a brawler, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyway,
like,
I digress. So you're
the third of four boys.
So you're a middle child. You know, middle children are awesome. I mean, they're all, I'm a firstborn, so firstborns are awesome. Babies are awesome.
My wife is a firstborn, and I'm like super into firstborn. I mean, I'm,
yeah,
like, I feel.
That's a good fit.
I admire and feel inferior to all firstborns,
right.
Basically.
Like, well, this is what's, I was just telling someone this the other day. Middle children are so awesome because I feel like middle children can adapt to any situation. Like middle children are great to hang out with. They're great to travel with. They're fun to be friends with because
yeah.
They're just like super low drama, just like to have fun, just go yeah. with the flow.
Yeah, chameleon-esque sort of thing.
I think.
And then can lead to identity issues later in life.
No.
You're like I've been everything
no.
I've been everything everybody else needs me to be. Now who am I sort of thing.
Oh, it's, shoot.
And it's funny. No, and I mean, that's a pretty dark joke
oh.
to make. But there's some truth to it.
Yeah.
And I remember like I did kind of go through some soul searching later on in life in my 20s. And when I met my wife, there was this kind of pivotal moment where I was like, I'm just me.
Yeah.
She just loves me for me. And this is like the first like relationship I've been in where I feel like I'm not trying to mold myself to, you know,
yeah.
whatever it is. So it comes with its advantages and disadvantages. I've probably had some career success because
yeah.
I'm pretty good at giving people what they want and stuff,
right,
you know.
But, right. Yeah, I get it. How long have you and your wife been together?
We'll be married 6 years in September.
Okay.
But we've been together something 11.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we've been dating right. a long time. Then we were friends for years before
oh,
that.
Oh, see, that's
like that.
The best.
So it was essential for yeah. us.
So Pete and I have been together for almost 16 years. And it's just like from the moment we met, you just knew, oh, this just, it just works. Like best friends and yeah. just it all perfect fit team.
Yeah. How did you meet?
Oh, that's a great question. Are the tables
turning?
I want
to know all about it. Totally.
We're going to get back to music. We went to the same hairdresser, which is funny because he's bald,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And he
relate.
Was walking out of an appointment one day, and I was walking in, and we bumped into each other on the street and made small talk for a minute. And at the time, I was writing and producing for a marketing company right down the street, and we made some chit-chat for a few minutes. I mentioned where I work, and I walked away, and I called my best friend from childhood. And said, I just have to say this out loud. I just met the man I'm going to marry.
No
said,
way.
Yeah. She actually did the toast at our wedding. And I just knew. But that was it.
There and did were... he call a friend and say something similar? Like,
well, no, he didn't. But there was no plans.
Here's a smoking hot woman, like a few years younger well... a few years younger than me, who's intimidatingly driven. And anyway.
Well, he we didn't make any. There was no plans for follow up. There was not. I just mentioned where I work. So
mm-hmm.
I was on a job assignment in Mexico. And you know, this was before iPhones and all of that. And everyone knew I was gone. So I wasn't checking messages. And I was coming home. I landed in Miami and I had a layover, called the office, checked messages. And I had a message on Monday saying, Danielle, this is Pete Karmanis. I want to talk to you about a work project. And then beep, Tuesday, Danielle, this is Pete Karmanis. Call me back. Beep, Wednesday, Danielle, this is Pete. Beep, Thursday,
oh, you
beep,
didn't get
Friday.
Any of these messages.
I didn't get any of the message. So by Friday, I said, Danielle, it's Pete. Why won't you call me back? So
no
I called him
way.
Back and I ended up going to his office. He said, come to my office. I want to talk to you about a work project. We're going to go to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. So at the time, they were still in Farmington Hills. I got to the office. We were going to lunch. We had another guy with us. We're on the elevator and the guy looked at me and asked, so are you in sales? I said, oh, no. I've got, no, I hate salespeople. What do you do? And he said, I'm the vice president of sales. I go, of course you are. And then we went to Baco and Pete said he knew he was in love with me because I ate a full steak. He'd never seen a girl eat so much before.
Yeah.
So, but I was just back from Mexico. I wanted a good steak. You
For
know?
Sure.
So that was it. And that was, you know, 16 years and four kids later.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
You would never like, you just walked away from that first meeting with him and you
just walked
and it
away.
Was just like...
And I, at the time, just turned 30 and I'd always worked. I'd never been like a person like chasing relationships. I was fine being mm-hmm. single and didn't really believe at love at first sight. I kind of thought I'll just work all the time.
I don't think I've ever quite had a cosmic experience like
no.
that, like that
yeah.
intense. You know, my wife and I like, I mean, I'm nuts about her.
Yeah.
But it was totally a slow burn for a long time. And I love that.
But I think like, a slow burn is great. It's solid.
For sure.
It's a solid foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I believed in it either until I met Pete. But, you know, Pete's Pete. He's just, you know,
yeah.
he's kind of next level.
yeah. Is he a firstborn too?
Yes. Yeah.
I always wonder if firstborns get along with firstborns because, like,
it's a great question.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say like jockeying for position, but there's, I mean, obviously we carve it out, right? But there's a lot of opinions.
Well, you both have your own things.
Yeah. And I think that's the trick. So
yeah, and my wife and I both have our own things.
It's important.
But we butt heads plenty.
And but I think that's
good
too.
I'm not even a firstborn. But she's 10 years younger than me.
Okay.
And like 400 years more mature than me and stuff like that. And so anyway.
I get it.
We make all that work.
Yeah. And you know what? And like the little bit of the friction and the arguing, we were just talking to our boys about that because we were like arguing over something like super benign. Like we're going to. Oh, because he was smoking a cigar in the car with my son who has asthma.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I wasn't cool with
that. It's not so benign.
He's a little old school.
Right.
Yeah. It was a bit of a thing. And when my boy said, you know, oh, I heard you guys arguing about it. And we said, oh, yeah, but you know what? It's good to argue sometimes, right? Like people ask me all the time, four boys, do they fight? And I always say, yeah, it would be weird if they didn't fight, right?
For sure.
So yeah, I think it's healthy in relationship.
Yeah. And I heard, because I work on the Armchair Expert, I sometimes quote it because I'm listening to it all the time. And
yeah,
it's like the gospel of Armchair Expert or something. And Dax Shepherd says with his kids, it always sticks with me a little bit, is that kids often see their parents fight, but they never see the resolution because somewhere in the middle of that fight, they say, like, we shouldn't be fighting in front of the kids. And like,
oh,
no, you should continue and let your kids see how you resolve problems, which they will invariably have.
And
so I always think about that because there is a tendency with me and my wife to be like, this is enough. Like, just we'll talk about this later. And I'm like, no, because they just saw us fail. Like, they just saw us fail at resolving this. And we're going to resolve it. So let them stick around for it. But it's hard. It seems counterintuitive.
No, it totally makes sense. You know, I remember my first big fight with Pete. It was big. It was ugly. And, you know, this was a long, long time ago. And my mom's a psychologist. So I grew up where you're just,
oh, my dad's a psychologist.
Oh, really?
That's wild.
Yeah.
Well,
we
could go bowling.
Oh, boy. We just took a turn
on
this show. So, you know, you talk about things a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was raised by a single mom. So that was just kind of the world I knew growing up.
Right, right.
And so Pete and I then had our first huge, huge fight. I thought, that's it. We're broken up. You know, I was sitting on the floor crying and he walked in and he looked at me. I said, I thought we were, he said, why are you crying? And I said, I thought we're over. We broke up. And he said, you're still talking about that? And I said, well, what do you want? And he said, do you want chicken or steak for dinner? Like, do you want red coat or buddies?
That's so me, like, and my wife. Like, she's so efficient with like processing that stuff and getting over it.
He
and
was
I'm
over
like,
it. It was done. We fought. We said what we had to say. He genuinely didn't understand why we were still talking about it. And I think we found the balance in the middle that's been super healthy for both of us.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I have to say, I just want to clarify because I mentioned him smoking a cigar in the car with his son with asthma because he is a tremendous dad and with that, you know, and he never misses a practice or anything, and he really thought like sticking his head out the window with all the windows open, we're in Florida, was okay. And
I would have done that with not at this age. I like cigars now and then too. I don't think I do. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I don't think I do that, but when they're 9, I'll probably be like,
your
old man's worked
hard.
Fine.
He was everybody was totally fine, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be broadcast, so I just want to be clear because he is pretty amazing. So back to you and your musical career.
Mm-hmm. So your philanthropy.
So I'm picturing your house with 6 kids and music playing. I mean, you know, I have 4 boys running around, and to me that sounds like the dream, right? Like the energy of all of the music and all of that. So do you feel like that's where it kind of like the love of the energy of the music all started?
God.
Or was it just something that you excelled at? Did you do it at school?
I think it was hardwired into me at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure all sorts of externals came into play with it. Ones that I totally take for granted. As far as I'm concerned, like I have two and that's the way to go. I've seen like the, you know, 6, you can't really hang. You can hang with like a family of 4. You can like really hang together.
Yes.
And get to know each other. And 6, it was like, I couldn't even imagine. I'll go out with a friend to lunch and she has 2 kids and she'll go get the car and I'll take care of all 4 like for 2 minutes. And I would like, I'll lose one of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
I know.
It's like one or one will be, my brain doesn't have the room to think about that many people that I'm responsible for. Like even when the second came along, it was a whole new dynamic and like that I have to remember another one.
Right.
And with 4, it's just like, I'll sit there for 45 minutes. I'll be like, I was focused on 3 and I literally completely forgot that the 4th existed, you know, when, anyway.
No, that's a real thing. I find myself all the time going, wait, do I have all 4? I'm constantly 1, 2, 3, 4. Wait, what's the plan today? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
And it definitely begs the question, do I care about my children? No, no, of course. but no, but two's the limit for me. That's all I can do. I can't even imagine six. It's a totally different dynamic. And you just become, I feel like at least my parents became more providers, and that was what they were occupied with most of the time, as opposed to like really being able to hang and connect with us, which they did a fair share of too, but like it just gets harder at that level. So,
yeah.
But we had our own community.
Yes,
separate from them.
That's what I was going to say. Like we tend to, you know, we live a little bit far from our school. So we're like just far enough that we're out of the whole play date kind of thing, because it's just logistically hard to do. Like my window from 3 to 8 is just like survival mode, getting everybody to everything, like the driving to activities.
You get behind
the
wheel of the
thing.
Car and you take a deep, like a big breath, like you're just like everybody's in seatbelts.
Yeah,
and like, oh my
I
God.
Mean we're just in the car a lot, but as much as I can, I like us to be together and moving as a pack, because there is a lot of them and I want them to be connected and invested in each other, right? And once I start like spreading everybody out and, you know, everyone's at someone else's house, then they're less connected. So were you guys like that when you were growing up, where you were all over the place, or were you at home?
The oldest was born in 1970, 71. I was born in 78. I'm 40.
Okay.
So he's in his late 40s. The youngest is 30. So it was almost a 20-year spread of having six kids.
Got it.
I think it would have been a little different if my mom had them all in,
like in a short span.
In a short span. So
yeah.
So one was already kind of off to college while the other two were like just getting into the world.
Got it.
So there wasn't as much interaction between the oldest and the youngest. But no, we kind of like eked out our own communities, like sub-communities.
Yeah.
And we weren't all together as a pack most of the time. But I'm really tight with my younger couple siblings. And, you know, I guess maybe being in the middle, I kind of have like an arm into both sides of it. So I would say there's like the top three and the bottom three. And I kind of like maybe am the common ground between.
Yeah, I get that.
I guess, I don't know. I don't consider it too often, but like, because there wasn't as much of a pack, like a unified pack. I'm like, I hate saying that. I want to say like.
I know. No,
yes,
no.
Because I love those families where it's a total pack and like.
But I love the idea of a family of like a musical family of six. Like it's very, it sounds very Partridge Family in my mind.
For sure.
Anyway,
I know. I want it to be like a big pack and like Diane Lane plays the mother or something like that.
Right.
And like, there's a common understanding about all things artful and musical, I think, with all of us. Like each one of us has a sensitivity toward it. And I haven't really considered this much, but now that you ask, I think that above all else is something that we all respect in each other. Because we have all sorts of differences.
Do you have a favorite song that makes you think of your siblings or growing up?
Oh, God.
Or your mom?
My mom. My mom used to sing Sentimental Journey to me, and that was one we did. I danced at my wedding with that to her, but I don't know it that well. But let me think.
Okay.
A family song. I'll do this one. So how about this one? Why not? What kid didn't think about their mom to this one? And I sing it to my kids and stuff. Baby mine, don't you cry. Baby mine, dry your eyes. Rest your head close to my heart, never to part, baby of mine. Little one, when you play, pay no mind what they say. Let those eyes sparkle and shine, never a tear, baby of mine. If they knew, sweet little you, they'd end up loving you too. All those people who scold you, what they'd give just for the right to hold you. From your head to your toes, you're not much, goodness knows, but you're so precious to me, sweet as can be, baby of mine.
Beautiful. Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, that one gets me, man. After you have kids, you know, you get more emotional about everything too.
Everything changes, so it's like, after you have
kids. Totally. You have a little spider creeping up
there.
Should we have you let people know on this podcast like where we are? Like what the office?
No, I'll just push it away. Okay. So
you're okay. You're okay, bud. There you go.
Well, he's alive. For everyone listening, he's alive. He made it.
Or she.
Right. Oh, good point. Okay, so movies.
Yes.
You've worked with Bradley Cooper and George Clooney.
Yeah, Bradley I didn't work with directly. I scored a film of Dax's.
Oh, I love that movie. Hit and Run, right?
Oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah.
And Brad was in it. I think I saw him at the premiere party and stuff like that, but I didn't even go out with him or anything. I don't know.
Was he not approachable?
I've heard I've heard he is everything I hear about him is he's delightful. In fact, one of the members of the Motor City Horns was out on the road with I can't remember his name right now. He was the lead singer of Oasis back in the day, and he's a huge songwriter. And they were on the road with him, and I think maybe Brad Cooper was a fan of his or something, and so this horn player said, hey, you know, I was on the soundtrack of, you know, my friend scored Dax's movie and blah, blah, blah. And he was so into it and just wanted to chat with him about that. I think he's kind of the guy who's totally over celebrity and just wants to chat with artists and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
So I think he's terrific from everything I hear. I didn't make it over to his table. There were a bajillion people. And I had Ed Norton was at the party, too. And I really wanted to go and talk to him. And then I just got caught up talking to other people. So I talked to neither of the people.
Who's the most surprising celebrity you've met?
Like not what I expected?
Right.
Mm. Danielle Carmano.
Oh.
God, I've had good experiences with everybody I've met. Everybody in the Ides of March was amazing in their own way. Marissa Tomei was as kind as could be. George Clooney was as kind as can be and really personal. I kind of expected them to not even talk with me.
Right.
Philip Seymour Hoffman was amazing and bizarre.
Wow. Oh, wow.
He was so weird and such an artist. And I don't think he was ever thinking about anything but the art, which is probably why maybe.
He must have passed pretty soon after.
Yeah, I think that was one of the last movies he did.
Oh, wow.
So I thought he was a d*** at first.
Yeah.
And he was just real standoffish. And I was like, okay, this guy like doesn't want it. And then just before he went on for a scene, he was pacing up and down, like in a real, like kind of heavy OCD way. Like, and every artist has this thing, like just before he went on for a scene, and it was just so intense. I was almost like, you know, scared off. But I heard a phone ringing upstairs. We filmed at Cliff Bell's, and I heard a phone ringing upstairs, and I was concerned that it might interfere with the sound recording. And I said to him, he just had this like, this grumpy look on his face and like this every ounce of energy in him, you know, said like, don't approach me, whatever. And I just said to him,
and you approached.
And I said, yeah. And I said, can you hear that phone upstairs? And he looks at me and I wish we had, well, I guess we do have some visual, but he goes, I'll do it right at the camera. He goes, what? And he has this huge grin on his face and he puts his hand on my shoulder and he was like super awesome and kind. And I realized that he's just completely in his head.
So did it feel genuine or manic?
It was super genuine.
Okay.
I mean, like he touched me and it was like, I could like feel the love coming from this guy.
Right.
And he was so immediately concerned. And I was like, all my notions were completely unfounded.
Wow.
And I was totally like judging this guy because he's super famous. And so like, I need to be important too. And like,
right.
And so I immediately went into like, you know, protective mode, not realizing that this guy was like super kind. And then we talked and everything was great. I have a feeling he's just, his head is in the art at all times, which is probably why he did a lot of drugs to kind of quiet that part of him so he could sleep or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know him that well, but that was just, you know, so there's more completely unfounded speculations about him, but maybe that was the deal. I would have loved to have picked his brain for hours on end after that. So I think that was maybe the most interesting celebrity encounter. But everybody on that film was...
That's great.
It was surreal and amazing. And I wish I was still friends with them. It's like, I wish I had George Clooney's cell phone number.
It would be good, right?
George showed me some videos. He wanted to show me some videos of this band he took some videos of when they were in Cleveland. He showed me his phone. And I put my hand on his phones just instinctively to get a better look at it.
Slash program your number.
To get a better look at it like you would when somebody, and he like pulled it away.
Oh.
And I was just like, of course you would pull it away because you probably have the Queen's number.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you got Brad Pitt's number in there. You have like Harvey Weinstein's number in there. Like I can't even imagine. I would love to just like get inside that phone and just see who's in there.
It would be amazing.
So
yeah, Pete golfed with them once, and who else was at our table? It was a great table. This was like maybe like 15 years ago. Josh Groban,
who
was very nice. In fact, I rode to the golf course with him, and he was just very sweet and
he
sincere.
Seems delightful.
And he seemed very down to earth. And Wayne Gretzky was at our table.
Wow,
oh, he's so nice.
Yeah,
yeah, he's just Canadian.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Oh, man.
You know,
I'm aspiring Canadian.
I want my kids to be Canadian.
Yeah,
be kind.
I kind of do
too.
I went on tour there with a band when I was 19 and I was sold.
Yeah.
It's just a totally, and they still maintain that vibe. Like it's.
Well, it's like an adjective, right? Like if you're describing someone, you say, well, they're Canadian.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
You just know they're just quality.
Yeah.
So how often do you go out on tour? Well, now that you have kids, probably.
Very rarely.
Okay.
Anymore. I was touring quite a bit before they came, actually, in particular with a songwriter named Olivia Millershin, who is fantastic. It's been a total source of joy for me for the last 3-4 years to work with her. And we were doing some 2- and 3-week things here, West Coast and East Coast. And as soon as the kids came, I just had to stop. And
you don't want to miss anything.
No. I went on one and I missed them so much. I was like, I can't do it. And there are people that have to tour. I mean, fortunately, I make 98% of my living in town, and don't have to go out on the road and stuff.
Where do you
that,
like to play locally?
I like everywhere I play locally. I don't do that many bars and restaurants these days. It's almost been all private events and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And I actually worked with Mickey Gardner quite a bit, who I think does a bunch of stuff for you guys, right?
Yeah, she did. And now she just finished her certification to be a life coach.
I saw that too.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, so great.
Yeah, I'm really happy for her.
She's awesome. She's just another interesting person she's just awesome and complicated and wonderful.
I mean, she really is. I had this really amazing conversation with her about a year ago when our boys were playing on the same lacrosse team.
Mm-hmm.
And it just ended up being like a random practice or something. And we happened to sit together and just very quickly went into this really profound, deep, life-changing conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I walked away going, only with Mickey,
right?
I mean,
yeah,
I'm like,
totally.
It was just like one of those random days where you're rushing, you sit with her, and it just felt like everything just came together. So I just love what she's doing.
Yeah, you never know when that stuff's going to happen. Another friend of yours, or I think you just got back from Oregon. Is that true?
No, I have family in Oregon.
I thought you...
I was on a Disney cruise. Sometimes they get confused.
There was a friend of mine texted me this morning and said, I saw that you were going to be on this podcast today.
Yeah.
I guess you put something on an Instagram story or something.
Yeah.
Mary Sandler.
Oh, the song, Oopsie. Oh, yeah.
Do you know Mary?
I do.
And she just got back from Oregon. I thought that she said it was a class trip that she went on with. I must be mixing up two things.
No.
But I think your kids go to school together or something like that.
She's great. She's been really amazing in supporting the arts programs at school and really getting it on people's radar with music and just the theater and all of it.
Totally awesome.
Yeah. She's
we
a force.
Worked together
she's great.
For a while at Woodruff's Restaurant in Royal Oak. And I don't know if you remember that place, but it's now Oak City Grill. It's become totally like just rowdier and dirtier and more just like raucous sort of. It used to be kind of like more of a snooty supper club and stuff like that. And I kind of cut my teeth playing gigs there when I was a kid and, learned to drink beer and stuff, whatever. And still to this day, that was probably my favorite place to play, circling back around to your question. It really depends. I mean, most of the places are the same, bars and restaurants. Yeah. I like doing a bar or a restaurant once a month, but it's, you don't make any dough doing it. But you can just be you and you can do the music you want to. And there's some sort of masochistic part of me that likes still getting mistreated by management.
Yeah.
And like, and,
yeah, well,
and
I mean,
stuff like
that. No, I get it.
I love it. And I just, no, I love the, I
like
love
maybe
the vibe.
A little bit past it, but are there times, is it inspiring in a twisted kind of way?
Yes.
Like it keeps it a little bit real?
I think like you're not dealing with as much money. And so I hate to admit that the higher the dollar amount, the more political you can get and the more people there are to please or impress or sign emails with best and exclamation points and stuff like that. And bars, it's just you got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So you just go in there and you're just you. And so that's why I like, it's kind of a return to reality a little bit sometimes.
So I said in the open that there's a rumor that you grew up playing funerals with Kristen Bell.
In high school, we did. Yeah.
So that's true.
She said that, you know, like I remember, yes, well, we went to Shrine High School, you know, and there's the religious element there. So we were doing some weddings and some funerals and stuff like that. And like, I think she almost made it sound like we were professional funeral singers or something.
A little bit.
I think we probably did a handful of them.
I mean, she's just so crazy talented, right? So I know her as an actress. And it's funny, last night, you know, I was telling you earlier, my boys are obsessed with the song Oopsie,
yes.
right? Which hopefully will play for us a little bit later, or at least have to play and give
too.
Me an iPhone video to show them just
so
I can get some street cred with my boys.
Sure.
But as we're sitting around the dinner table listening to this song, it's funny. So my boys, of course, know Kristen from Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Pete knew her from something else. And then I knew her from Bad Moms or, you know, all these different.
Right.
I just thought her range and her ability.
She wears so many hats, right?
And so has she always been such a spectacular voice? Or when she was growing up, what was she kind of, what did you know her as?
You mean as far as her, has she had the same voice singing wise? Or
well,
you mean like
when you were growing up, was she the theater girl or?
She was definitely the theater girl.
Well, because I thought it's interesting now that, you know, my boys think of her voice in the Frozen movies, right? And I think of her as an actress. And I thought, well, I wonder, you know, if she'd always kind of been all over the place.
They've
or
always
kind of
gone hand in hand. And she has been all over. She's good at everything she does. And she's great at, she's such an interesting human being. She's great at picking up anything she sees that somebody does well. She can pick it up and put it in her bag and use it later.
Wow.
And like, I watch her do it. And like, I think I'm kind of good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, at least good enough so that I can see her do it.
You can recognize it.
I can recognize it, even though she's worlds better at it than me. Like, I'll just see
like,
her
do.
Give
an example.
I'm trying to think. Like, there are jokes she has said and funny things she said that crack me up, but I know that they came from somewhere else. And I'm like, oh, I know where you picked that up. Like, I knew her well enough to know, like, that's not your material. That's somebody else.
Right.
Like, but you perfected it, and you made it better than even when they delivered it. And I'm trying to think of,
so
a
like
good,
her recall,
of a good example.
Like, for material.
She just makes it her own. And she's got a wealth of her own material, too.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the funniest people I've ever met. And I don't even think... And she's funny on screen and funny in interviews, but still not nearly as so as, like, in person. She just says things that are so uniquely... Like, I've never... Like, she's got a brand that's uniquely her. And amazing. But she says... She'll say herself. She said... She's like, I'm not a writer. My gifts lie in being able to take something somebody wrote for me and make it funny. And whereas on paper it may not even be that, like she's the one who really breathes life into these scripts.
Yeah.
And she's made me realize the importance of the role of the actor in that way, because you can have brilliant writers, and I've always been the person to kind of like assume, well, yeah, the actors are funny and whatever, but the writers are like where it's at,
right?
You know, I mean, they came up with this stuff, they generated it in their imagination. Super important. And I'm not saying one is less or more important than the other, but people like her have made me realize how essential an actor is, because like that, I mean, that stuff would never have a life. It would never see the light of day if they didn't breathe life into it. So yeah, I can't peg her. I don't know what her real style is, because she's good at everything.
It makes me so happy for her success. You know, as hard as it is to be successful in the entertainment field, that she just, it just makes me happy that she is able to soar and be everything she's meant to be.
Totally.
You know,
she,
with such a magnificent skill set that maybe can't be defined.
Yeah. And she just gets better and better at it, and better at becoming, like people say, like, you know, has the celebrity affected her, blah, blah, blah. And like, who doesn't it affect, number one? And who isn't, and it's not just celebrity that, like, who isn't affected by everybody's surroundings affect them no matter what they are. And like, so of course it's going to affect you.
Yeah.
But in the cliche way that they're implying, like, has it made her surfacey or shallow or anything like that? I think it's become the exact opposite. She's used her celebrity as a platform for mental illness and charity. And you know, and she'll do her Instagram posts without makeup and without. Mm. And I think she has this yearning to just be totally human.
To be like normal.
Even more than before she had soared to that level.
I think it was Oprah, or I'd read somewhere that she said, you know, sometimes money and success, it doesn't change you. It just makes you more of who you are. So if you're generous, you're more generous. If you're big hearted, it makes you more philanthropic. If you're just kind of a jerk, it might make you a bigger jerk.
It's just a tool to allow you to be who you are, more who you are, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So what are you working on now? Will you play something for us?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Podcast themes. Interestingly enough, a ton of podcast themes. There's a wife of Kristen and Dak started a company, Hello Bello. It's like a baby line company.
Oh, okay.
Diapers and creams and ointments and whatever. And anyway, they're pushing that real hard. And the co-CEO of this company, his wife is starting a podcast where she and a friend talk about true crime. They drink cocktails and talk about true crime.
That's great.
And
so I'm working on it.
So like literally the last 24 hours, like trying to think of like every configuration of the way to say talking crime in the carpool line, like, and getting inside.
So to me, when you're saying that, it's almost, I'm not musical. So hearing you say that, it sounds like a riddle to me, like how you take the pieces and the inspiration.
Totally.
Okay.
I love that about them. Like, I love it and I hate it. And I mean, ultimately, I love it, but it's super challenging. I try to take the words, take some sort of words, and I do kind of think there's like a melody living in sort of everything, you know, like, I mean, it sounds hippie-ish, but like, I look at those flowers and I'm like, there's a melody in there somewhere. Like, it makes a sound when I look at it. And if I consider it for a long time, I will start to, you know, kind of like a sculptor sees the statue inside the rock somewhere. And I don't see it, but like he or she does. And I'm like, there's a melody in there. And when somebody gives me words.
Like, Kristen, it makes me so happy that you're doing what you do and that this is your profession and your outlet. That, I mean, to just look at an arrangement of flowers and say it's been speaking to you.
I mean, that one hasn't.
But I think that's fascinating.
I think if you're really going to write well, I think all the great songwriters and all the, and I'm not saying that I'm in that category necessarily, but I think they believe that you don't necessarily write melodies. You kind of like find them, you know, or pull them out of something. On my best day, that's what I try to be whenever I write something. And that thing has been podcast themes lately for some reason. It's just the same way you say something. Like, you have a sentence of 5 words that you want to say to somebody and you think a million times about how you're going to say it and like with what tone and like for various purposes, either to get your point across or to like convey love to them and or like to not make them scared of what you're saying. And, you know, and I think that's the same way with music and lyrics.
I feel stupid to even compare myself to what you guys do. But back when I was my profession was writing and producing and even since, you know, in the last 16 years, I've had a lot of chances creatively to write treatments or writing for broadcast. And for me, when I'm writing, which is what I love to do, and I have a journalism degree from Wayne State. I know you went to Wayne State.
Oh, yeah.
For me, when I get to be in that space, it's almost like a rapper writing a flow, you know, where the words just kind of come to me. And it's, do you know what I mean? Like, for someone who doesn't experience it, it's really hard to explain. Like, where there's almost, when I'm typing, there's like, and I'm not musical, but there's like a cadence to it for me. There's a groove, like the flow of it. So that's kind of what you're.
And as soon as you get it, you can't like realize you're getting it, or otherwise you like fall off the wave. You know what I'm saying? Or like, and then you sit there agonizing, trying to like center yourself back with that flow. And then you realize that if you're trying to do it, you're never going to get there. Like, you need to, you know, it's this total zen thing. And that's in everything from music to writing to baristaing and, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, when you have the chance to do what you love to do and you get in that space, it's just, it's a really magical feeling. Yeah.
Yes. My father-in-law says he can get there anytime. So he's a musician too. I mean, he was a career IT guy, but he's one of my favorite musicians. And he was like, yeah, I can just kind of get there anytime I want.
Wow.
What? And I kind of believe it about him because he is kind of a, he's just kind of a Yoda.
Yeah, who knows what his process is. Like, I think when I would write something and I would give it to someone and they would say, wow, how did you do that? And I go, I don't know. It's not like I would black out and write it, but my head was just so in that space and the flow that when I popped out of it, I would even read what I wrote and think, I don't know how that happened.
Just let it happen.
I mean, do you ever feel that way with music where it just kind of flows out of you and then you listen and go, wow, I just don't know where that came from.
Yeah. It's like I try to avoid cliches with it, but it's, because you just got yourself out of the way and it was like you were the vessel through which it came as opposed to like you created this, you know, like God or the divine or, you know, whatever created it, I guess.
Well, you are a music minister, right?
I am. How did that slip in? That's like kind of a closet.
I did my research.
Yeah, I direct music at a church in Troy. It's called Christ Our Light. And okay. I never fancied myself a church music director, really. But I grew up going to Catholic school, so I kind of knew the format and was near that thing. And originally it was like an opportunity to make some dough and stuff when I was a kid, and it was great. And I was asked, and this is back in like 2000, this is 13 or 14 years ago. I was asked to sub some services at this place called St. Columban, and it was in Birmingham. And I went and did it because I'm a freelance musician. That's what I do. And then they asked if I wanted the job, and I said no. And went back a week later, and I said, why not? Let's salary plus benefits jobs are few and far between for a musician, so let's check this out. So I was not necessarily interested in church work or anything like that. And it ended up being like one of the great blessings of my life. I stumbled into it and I met wonderful people there and made some of the best music of my life. And it was very live and let live and pretty liberal in its thinking and stuff like that.
I always say you can't chase fun, right? It's always the things that I think, I don't know. I guess I'll just do that end up being so fun or meaningful or profound in our lives. And those things that sometimes we get the most excited about are just okay.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And just seeing an opportunity in everything too.
Yeah. So we only have a few more minutes. So
oopsies.
We play a
song. Let's do it.
First, before we get to oopsies, play something that you've been working on.
That's something I've been working on. Oh, God. Oh, for my own enjoyment, I haven't been working on anything. I probably can't reveal any of these podcast episodes yet. Let's see. How about
your favorite song to play?
It changes on any given day. I'll just play a standard. How about that?
Okay.
I think we have to worry about rights and stuff like that, too. So I don't want to come out of here having you owe $1 million to Bruce Springsteen's record label or something like that. But so. It's very clear our love is here to stay. Not for a year, forever and a day. The radio and the telephone, well, the movies that we know, they're just passing fancies, and in time they'll go. But oh my dear, our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble. They're only made of clay. Oh, but our love is here to stay. Love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble. They're only made of clay, but forever and a day. Our love is here to stay. Our love is here to stay. How about that?
That was pretty amazing. So I think we're out of time.
Cool.
Are we out of time? No. Cool. Hasn't been fun?
Cool.
I had fun.
No, I'm not.
Oh.
Not that.
I thought it went by
no,
fast.
No, you said that was amazing, and I said cool.
Oh, okay.
If you want to do oopsies, I mean, I can do like 30 seconds of it.
Yeah.
This is for Sock and Leo and Spiros and Kai. All right. Ready?
Ready.
You ready? Okay. Maybe it hurts too much. Maybe I can't hold it in. But don't tell me you don't know how it feels. Yeah, you know how it feels. We all do. Maybe it's just as well. We let this thing slip out. Baby, when I do this to you, Don't act like you don't do it too, 'cause you do it too, yeah. Oopsies, oopsies, oopsies. Oopsies, oopsies, oopsies. Oopsies, oopsies, oopsies. I farted.
Yay! Thank you. Thanks for coming over and hanging out in the trailer.
Of course. Thank
Thanks
you for having me.
Thanks for playing some tunes. It was fun to talk with you. Maybe you can come back.
I would be delighted.
Okay,
I would be
cool.
Tickled.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you liked what you heard, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com and keep up with Danielle by subscribing for free in your favorite podcast app. Just search Karma Has Spoken.